Another point of contention. According to the comments section of a high-end real estate blog, the home recording studio. Home recording studio is real estate jargon for a soundproof fucking cage. And some anonymous commenter likens this airtight box to a panic room, and this is good news. I could use this. I could put Fincher there. But first, I have to get him there. So now I have to convince Robin Fincher to come to Mexico. But you can't seduce anyone without knowing what they're into. Because of the headshots in the car, I start at IMDb, where he has a comically long bio in comparison to his few credits. He moved to LA to be an actor, downgraded his dreams and worked as a stuntman, a stand-in, a crew guy, and then finally he gave up and joined the LAPD. But Robin Fincher also has a website, and it is immediately clear that he did not become an officer of the law to protect and serve. Robin Fincher became an officer of the law to get back at Hollywood for kicking him to the curb. He crossed his IMDb LAPD streams in 2011 when he started moonlighting as a celebrity bodyguard. He brags that he can protect you and hang out with you all at once. And yes, that phrase is trademarked. The most recent picture is of him and Terry Hatcher. I lean back in my chair. He claimed he's on a mission to find Delilah, California, that he cares about our girls. Well, we'll see about that. I search for projects currently shooting in Mexico, and there's nothing but a remake of Romancing the Stone. No, I need to appeal to his obvious desire to be friends with these beautiful fucking people. I create a new email account, meganisafox@gmail.com. She's the perfect bait. She has a family to protect, like Terry Hatcher. She's hot. I learned from the Sony hack that people in the business don't bother to spell check, so here we go.
Dear Officer Fincher, this is out of the blue, but my friend Terry Hatcher was raving about you going Bed Bath & Beyond to help her. I'm going to Cabo and would love some extra protection. Not sure if you do this. Feel a little silly, like the singer in Taken, but you sound like the best there is. We are going tomorrow. Can you possibly be there? Of course, we will reimburse you for all travels. Hope you are available. Fingers crossed. XX Megan Fox.
If I got an email from someone claiming to be Megan Fox, I would assume it was spam. I would think someone was fucking with me. Fincher is a cop. He's not a moron. But maybe he is. Because look at his fucking response. Almost immediate. Dear Miss Fox, wow, I am a huge fan. I am so honored to help you. Yes, I am the best. Terry is the best, too. I'm glad she knows I'm using personal resources to keep track of her stalker. There are so many sickos out there. I am honored to serve and protect. I am attaching my headshot and resume so you know what I look like. No objection if you want to pass it on to your agent, either. I'm in SAG-AFTRA. See you tomorrow. Wow is right. L.A. is a mirage. Robin Fincher is a police officer. The man carries a weapon. And we all know the stereotype of the bad cop. Racist, violent. And we know the good cop. The one who pays for the poor mom's groceries and winds up in a viral news video. But what about this cop? What about this Angelino, the one who pushes his headshots on Megan fucking Fox? The one who isn't even savvy enough to maybe wait until getting to Mexico to start pimping his no-talent ass. We need some sort of awareness program about aspirations, the way they degrade the brains of Los Angeles. I am honored to serve and protect. No, Robin. The word is two, not the number two. No, Robin. You don't serve or protect anyone, and if you did, you'd be hunkered down over a cloudy cup of coffee, reviewing every step that Delilah ever took. Obviously, this fucker is never going to find her. And while this is good news for me, it's also devastating for the population of the city he loves so much. We Angelinos are not served. We are not protected. The city can't afford to look after everyone, and the county is just too spread out.
I would kill Fincher even if he weren't hell-bent on putting me behind bars. I will kill him because he failed us all when he chose Megan fucking Fox over the young dead girl, the one whose whereabouts will remain unknown forever. Chapter 37. It's 9 a.m., but the other passengers on the Love Boat 4 are already drunk. The Quinns own 4 boats in Cabo, and this is the one they use for fishing for marlin, which is what we're doing, supposedly. It's a guys-go-fishing-while-girls-get-mani-pedis on the catboat arrangement. We have enough food and beer and tequila to feed 50 people, but it's just me and 40 and Milo and a couple of guys from production whom I didn't know all month. Don't want to know. I'm sitting in a plastic bucket seat holding a fishing rod, and Captain Dave is telling me what Love and 40 were like when they were kids. Captain Dave is a salt-and-pepper guy who looks older than 46. He doesn't have kids of his own. Some people are born to be uncles, and Captain Dave is that kind of people. He's also a recovering alcoholic who's obsessed with what everyone else is drinking at all times. Life is hard for some people. But you know, he says, segueing from a story about the first time they jumped off the boat, holding hands. It's really hard to talk about Love and 40 without talking about Milo. I mean, he was always there, too. And you should have seen his hair back then, he laughs. Huge! I gotta see pictures, I say. And kissing ass is hard work, but I need Captain Dave to be on my side. I'm gonna need his help this weekend. And lucky for me, he's likable enough. We got pictures on all the boats, he says. I just don't know where exactly on this one. There are more on the yacht. He twists the cap off another O'Doul's. He sips. But yep, that's why I called Milo the third twin. I look at him. Did you say you called Milo the third twin? He answers through a burp. Yep. You need another drink? I shake my head and he continues to yammer on about Love and 40 and Milo always together, and I stare at the water. I thought 40 came up with that phrase, and Captain Dave finishes his fake beer. He stands, stretches. All right, he says. I think it's about time we chum up. Aye, aye, Cap, I say, as if I know what that means. I offer to help Captain Dave with the barrel he's messing with, but as always, he says he's all set. He peels off the top of the barrel, and now I smell death and decay, and I cover my mouth, and he laughs. Boy's first chum, he says. Don't worry, you don't get used to it. Then he whistles, and his assistant, first mate Kelly, a fat guy from Georgia, rings a bell and blasts Jimmy Buffett. Apparently it's time to go fishing, and Captain Dave scoops chum into the water. All I can think about is Fincher and how I can drive this boat out here and drop him into the water just like I did with Delilah, the girl he's supposed to be looking for. Done and done. 40 is plastered and he barely makes it to his chair, and Captain Dave stuffs his fingers in his mouth and whistles. Nope, he says. Give it a sober 10 and then come back. 40 whines, but Captain Dave isn't having it. My boat, my rules, he says. 40 goes back down while first mate Kelly helps Milo and me set up our rods. We dangle them in the water and Milo hums along to Buffett and tells me about Joanna, the makeup artist from Boots and Puppies. They slept together last night, and she's young and hot, and I guess he deserves to rub it in my face a little. 40 returns and asks for a rod, and Dave says no. And 40 lunges for the chum bucket and nearly falls in. Captain Dave screams, "Wheelhouse!" he commands. "Now!" 40 obeys, and Milo laughs, and I shake my head. That captain is something, I say. What do you mean? Milo asks. And it's funny to me that I was going to kill him a few days ago. I mean, he's on a mad power trip. Well, Milo says, he's Cap. He can be. Yeah, but it's 40's boat. Milo turns his reel. No, he says. The captain controls everything. It doesn't even matter if Ray is here. Boat owners say it's better because when you're messing with Mother Nature, you want someone who respects that above all else. Huh, I say. Boat people. I pretend to care if a marlin nips at my line while I think about Fincher. He arrives later today. My plan is simple. Get the keys from Captain Dave when we dock. Meet Fincher at Axl Rose's house. Knock him out, get Fincher onto the motor vessel and drive out here and dump him. Then go to the office with Love and eat fish tacos and drink margaritas and dance. Milo gets a bite. He has to hand the rod over to Kelly to reel it in because he's too weak to do it on his own. But then, when Kelly reels in the fish, he hurriedly hands off the rod to Milo so that Milo can pose as if he alone caught the fish. Captain Dave comes back and says we should probably head back to shore because they've been having issues with pirates. And that's when the girls' boat comes up on us, and all the girls are dressed up like pirates, firing with squirt guns, drunk, squealing. Captain Dave drops anchor and laughs. Love cannonballs into the water. Come on, she says. It's beautiful. It is. But none of these people understand that I'm not on vacation. I've got to get on the burner phone I bought before we left and call all the realtors who have attempted to sell Axl Rose's house in the past 2 weeks. There are 12 of them, and one of them has to know where the house key is. I beg off, and while everyone else swims, I go down into the cabin and go over my spiel. I'll introduce myself as Nick Ledger, a legendary bi-coastal realtor to the stars. I've seen him on shitty reality shows, and I do his voice pretty well. Thick Bronx, like he smoked 1,000 cigarettes. I'll tell them that I'm down in this sand pit for 2 goddamn days, and I get to Axel's house, and there's no fucking key because you people are so sunstroked you forget how this works. I've watched a lot of shows about real estate. I know the way they name drop and talk to each other and swear at each other. I know they all have different phones for different purposes. I practice the key phrases. Very famous fuck you money times 10 client, and I know who you know who I'm talking about is here. She's more private than your wife's dildo collection, and she is pissier than your wife when you come in her ass. And I am standing here without the key due to the one fucking pagoda that might be good enough for her, given her unique requirements. I call the first realtor, a woman who looks slutty and stupid like she would bang Nick Ledger, but she tells me to fuck off. I call a guy with big ears who looks like he was bullied most of his life. He can't remember who has the listing and he wants to know if I'm shooting. I call another woman. Older, probably went into this business after she saw American Beauty on cable. She has a New York accent too, Long Island. She says, "Honey, the key is up my puss. Good luck getting there." She hangs up on me. I growl. Nick Ledger is an asshole and a bridge burner, and I should have impersonated someone dopey and happy. But they don't have people like that in high-end real estate, at least not on TV. This isn't working, so I go into the real estate directory and look for brokers without pictures, the real fuck-ups who can't even get it together and show their faces. There is a guy named William Papava, and this is harder, calling someone when you haven't prejudged them based on their proclivity for neckties or earrings. He drops the phone before he answers. "Stupid phone," and his voice is abrupt. "Who is this?" "It's Nick fucking Ledger," I say.
"From the TV show?" he asks.
"Yes."
"Rockstar realtor?"
"Excuse me, are you giving me shit about a project that benefits my fucking business?"
"No, no, no," he says. "I know you is all."
"Well, listen, I got your number from that piece, Sonia." I don't know a Sonia, but I imagine realtors in Cabo know Sonias.
"Sonia," he says. "Okay.
I'm here 24 fucking hours and my team drove the car off the cliff and they don't have a key to Axl's and I need a key to Axl's."
"For the show?"
"Fuck you and answer the question." He puts me on hold a minute, then returns to the call out of breath.
"I can get you a key and leave it in the outdoor shower, but you can't fuck me here and tell anyone at Caldwell. I'm trying to make things right with them."
"Deal," I say. "Just make sure you leave the fucking gate open too." I tell him goodbye and go above deck and tear off my shirt.
Rockstar Realtor.
I put my phones into my seat pocket and cannonball off the boat like Love did. Under the water, I open my eyes and look around the Sea of Cortez for Delilah. But that's ridiculous. I left her in the Pacific. The water was beautiful, but the situation is irritating. I still don't have Captain Dave's key. He keeps them looped to his belt. They may as well be attached to his dick. He's that guy, and it would just be nice to have the keys in hand. I don't know how I will get the keys, but I will get them. It just means I need to get to know Captain fucking Dave a little bit more than I would have liked. And it's not the end of the world, but I'm sick of small talk. We're back at Love's Mexican mansion for disco naps, and Love is trying to convince me to stay with her instead of going for a run.
You don't need to, she says. You look great.
Thanks, I tell her, antsy. But it's more that it feels good, you know? I'm used to it now.
Maybe I'll go with you, she says and flops onto her back.
She's in the center of our round, heavenly bed. She's drunk and beautiful, and this house also feels drunk and beautiful, cavernous and curvy like the pantry, with random dramatic chunks of coral suspended on the walls. I check the time on my phone. I have an hour until Fincher arrives, and Love is begging for it, so I undress and tend to her on the bed. She's good even when she's slurring her words, and I feel revived. I needed that. A shower. I get into my running clothes, no shirt in Mexico, and I go downstairs, and Kathy, the housekeeper, startles me.
Are you going for a run? She asks.
Yeah, I say.
Evian or Fiji? She asks.
I smile. How about both? And then they can be like hand weights. She brings me two bottles and I thank her and she nods. Hey, I say, if I wanted to take a boat out, and the woman who was so eager to hydrate me is a different person.
Nobody drives the boats except Captain Dave or one of the first mates, she says.
She softens.
But you let him know where you want to go and you got it.
Fucking fuck. But I nod and take Captain Dave's number. I've been able to convince people to do what I want before. And outside, the uphill battle continues, literally. It's hotter now, and I have to run uphill to get to Axl Rose's fucking house, and I am losing my breath, and this is not like the flat, forgiving terrain of Palm Springs. I'm not even there yet, and already both waters are gone. I stop in front of a giant, ugly house, hands on knees to catch my breath. There is concrete everywhere. Jackhammers, unfinished business. I always loved all this shit when I was a kid. Dump trucks, concrete pourers. But now it irritates me. You can't tell if they're renovating or starting from scratch, and sometimes rich white people remind me of teenagers who can't stop picking at their scabs. I wipe my mouth and keep going. My thighs are on fire and my eyelids twitch, but I make it and the gate is open. Thank you, William Papava. Axl Rose's house is a Spanglish mausoleum, and no wonder it's been on the market for several years. It looks like there were battles here, and maybe an explosion. There's this fucking stupid cactus in the middle of the front patio. I imagine some cunt interior decorator digging a shallow hole at the last second, as if the cactus were going to make the buyers fail to see the incomplete landscaping, the frozen-in-time fiasco of it all. I walk around to the side, and sure enough, I find a little hideaway with an outdoor shower. There's an overflowing ashtray and bottle of shampoo and a leather satchel, and realtors are people too. You can feel the frustration, the many salesmen who smoked and showered and fucked and whined about this odd fucking house. I jog around to the front of the house and unlock the door, and it's like that moment when the lights go down in the theater. It's starting. It is. The house has marble floors and high ceilings, but it's not inspired like La Grosseria. And you can tell they're trying to stage it to appeal to Mr. and Mrs. Middle America, which seems counterintuitive, as Mr. and Mrs. Middle America generally can't afford a mansion in Cabo. I go into the kitchen and help myself to bottled water from the fridge. Then I reach into my fanny pack and begin preparations.
First, I email Fincher.
Hey, Robin. Can't wait to see you. Left the gate open for you. We're with the babies downstairs. So cute. When you get in, come down and join us. XOXO Meg.
I don't know if she goes by Meg, but Robin will like the familiarity. And now for the real fun. I used the fishing line I grabbed on the boat today to set a tripwire at the stairs, affixing them on either side with Bliss Poetic waxing wax strips. Love won't notice they're gone. Then I go back to the kitchen, take out two more generic water bottles, and crush several Percocets into them. I stick them in an empty ice bucket along with three expired Kind bars. Then take the spiral staircase down into the basement, and here it is. The panic room / home recording studio. A soundproof box with two leather chairs in it. There's a second key on the chain William Papava left me, and it fits in the lock on the door. And yes, it locks from the outside. Because sometimes you need to lock Les Pauls and Grammys and recording shit up. I bring the bucket inside and set it on the floor. I pick up a microphone and tap it. I turn on the biggest red button and I tap it again. It works. Finally, I wheel one of the leather chairs just outside the studio and wait for Fincher, and sure enough, he does not disappoint. 15 minutes later, I hear him drop his bag by the front door. "Hola!" he screams. The front door slams shut. He calls out again. "Hola!" Asshole. I wait with my back against the wall next to the bottom step. "Hello?" he asks, and he is a terrible actor. Anyone who reads acting manuals knows that good actors take direction, and he didn't. I hear a rustle, and I picture him delving into his phone and rereading the email where I specifically ordered him to report to the lower level of the house, and I am right. "Ah," he says. And now he crosses the marble foyer and looks for the basement door. I can smell him. Hairspray and suntan lotion. He whistles. "Knock, knock," he says. "Anybody home?" I disguise my voice and call out.
"Down here."
It's one of those fundamental things about being a human. The sound on the side of someone falling down the stairs is inherently funny, especially when it's an asshole like Fincher. He lies in a heap on the floor, knocked out. And I can't help but laugh as I drag him into the soundproof studio and lock the door. I stare at him for a moment, and my laughter stops as I notice how vulnerable he looks. His shirt has pineapples and palm trees on it. He's wearing board shorts and sandals, and I'm pretty sure he dyed his hair. He has chicken legs. He needs to do more leg presses. Well, he needed to. It's too late now. I call Captain Dave.
"Yo," he says. "This is the captain."
"Hey, Captain Dave," I say, all cheery and respectful. "It's Joe Goldberg, Love's boyfriend."
"Hey, Greeny," he says. "What can I do you for?"
"Well," I say, "I've got a little situation. This buddy of mine showed up and he's wasted. He passed out. Love's not a big fan. Anyway, I was thinking he could crash on the boat tonight."
"Ah," he says in a grave tone. "Sorry, but no can do."
I fake a laugh. "I didn't ask if he could drive the boat," I say. "I just need to get the keys, get Brian up there." "I understand what you're asking for, Skipper, but the answer is still no." I can tell that he's in a bar. I hate alcoholics like that, the ones who want to be near liquor. And I know his kind. I bet he goes to this fucking bar every day just to prove that he's sober. "Dave," I say, "I'm asking you to work with me here. My buddy is out cold. You know, he lost his room key. He can't even remember the name of his hotel." "I'm sure Love would let him stay at La Grosseria," he says. "Love hates him," I say. "So that's really not an option."
"Well, then I guess you're going to have to get your buddy a hotel room," he says. "Kath can get you a list of your best options."
"Captain Dave," I plead, "we're just talking about one night." He sighs.
I remember when my ex-wife fell off the wagon, she said, Dave, I only had one drink. He sighs again. Rules are rules, Joe. Good luck. He hangs up on me and the line is dead. Fuck. Fucking AA slave with his O'Douls and his restraint and his desire to impart the rules on me, same way he gave it all up to God, as if he doesn't sit here every day, all day, just wanting a beer, just a taste. I thought money was power. Isn't that how this godforsaken world is supposed to work? Captain Dave does what I say because love chose me? I pace. I don't have the money to get my own boat, and I can't very well leave Fincher in a fucking house. I learned my lesson. You clean up. You get rid of the body. You don't leave a mug of piss, let alone a cop's corpse. But what the fuck to do? Fuck Dave. He was supposed to say yes, sir, and Kath was supposed to be wrong, and I was supposed to call a cab, request a wheelchair, get to the marina, grab the keys from Dave. I can't believe I didn't make a backup plan. I have a 200-pound failed character actor in a soundproof box, and right now, he's pissing himself in his sleep. Love texts. Hello? I twisted my ankle on the run home. That's my story, anyway. I took Tylenol, which is why I'm not drinking, and I'm limping, and I'm not myself. Love insists that I come to the office with everyone, even though I'm a mess. She won't take no for an answer. And the office is surreal. A bar on the beach, in the sand. We sit at a long table. A tsunami could take us at any moment, and Love tells me to relax. This is Mexico, she says. You can get beheaded or kidnapped or shot or mugged or swept away by a riptide, but come on, Joe. A tsunami? She laughs. I don't think so, though I appreciate your imagination. That's my dark little girl, and I look out at the Pacific that took Delilah so completely, so willingly. She helps me even when she doesn't know it. Mexico is the murder capital of the world, the land of shallow graves and dead bodies. Fuck you, Ocean. Fuck you, Captain Dave. I don't need a boat. All I need is a shovel.
Chapter 38. Love got drunk at the office. I left her in bed, along with a note that my ankle was feeling better, so I went for a walk to stretch it out. She'll never know that I left at 4:42 a.m., or that I stopped off at that big house, the one where they're doing the most construction. None of the workers were there yet, and I roamed around the lot, checking out the nails and planks of wood, the slabs of marble, the cement mixers. I went around back and saw that they're building an infinity pool. And it wasn't the worst idea, Fincher resting in infinity. But now that I'm at Axel's house, I know I have to do better. This is rock and roll. This is time frozen, and so many people out there have so many keys. Fincher has to stay here. I can't be dragging him all over the neighborhood. I mean, yes, it's Mexico, but Mexico is like L.A. There are so many different parts of it. This isn't the area where you can casually behead people and drop them off in a neighboring pool. I have to be discreet. I'll be sweating today because of that fucker. For now, though, it's time for him to learn a lesson. I'm rummaging through his duffel bag. The contents alone are reason enough to kill him. He brought headshots and 5-pound weights and condoms and Jimmy Buffett t-shirts, tags on, asshole, and banana hammocks. Didn't he get the memo that this was work? But that's not even the bad part. The bad part is that Robin Fincher keeps an old-fashioned secretarial Rolodex of celebrity encounters. I'm serious. He bought this thing at Staples, and I can just picture him in line on his day off. This Rolodex is jammed with home addresses of famous people. When I get back to L.A., I can now visit Cruz, Tom, if I want, or my latest alter ego, Fox, Megan. And again I say, that's not even the bad part. Turn over an index card, and shit gets real. Fincher clearly started this project 10 years ago when he joined the force. Some of his references are dated.
Pattinson, Robert. Told him that I loved water for elephants and that he and Reese seemed like they're meant for each other. He seemed like the real deal. Salt of the earth. More British than you expect him to be. Tell agent to send him real. Yes, Fincher has dutifully cataloged his celebrity encounters, all of which happened while he was supposed to be protecting and serving. He has a simple routine. He pulls over celebrities to talk to them and kiss ass. Sometimes his notes are self-interested. Piven, J. Pulled over for jaywalking. Friendly. Funny. They say he's a jerk, but he was cool to me. Seemed genuine. Says to call his manager next week. Says he has a feeling about me. Says I need new headshots. Sometimes his notes are sad. Aniston, Jennifer. Said thank you for letting her know about robberies in neighborhood. Told me to stay hydrated. Sweet. And sometimes they're downright disturbing. Like when he told Adams, Amy that someone ran over the neighbor up the street's dog. So you get the idea. Robin Fincher, who alleges to be so protective of California, is in fact a level 10 celebrity stalker. I turn on the microphone. Hey, I say, wake up. I can be loud when I need to be. And Fincher rolls over and sits up and blinks. When he sees me, he bolts for the glass. He bounces off it, then, undeterred, body slams it again and again. I put my feet up and ignore him and continue to work my way through his Rolodex. The idiot is so busy trying to shatter unbreakable glass that he doesn't even seem to realize that I found his secret stash. When he finally exhausts himself and kneels on the floor panting, I turn on the mic again. Sit up, I say. Well, first, pick up the microphone, then sit. He takes the microphone, and he hasn't learned anything yet. He starts by ranting at me that he's a cop, as if I didn't know this. That he's an American, as if I'm not. That he's gonna see to it that I wind up behind bars, as if he's in a position to do this. Listen to me, I say. It's not too late to make things right. His nostrils flare. Where's Meg? Wow. I don't respond to that. It's too fucking pathetic. I pick up a card from his Rolodex. I'm gonna ask you a question. She's supposed to be here, he says, not listening. Fincher, I interrupt. I'm Megan Fox. He storms the glass again, and I have to let him work it out. Kick, punch, kick. He settles down, screams. When I think that's it for now, I continue. As I was saying, you can make things right by telling the truth. It's pretty simple. I just want you to explain some of your choices. When he ticketed me for jaywalking, Robin Fincher repeatedly reminded me that I had made a choice to jaywalk. And he's right, I did. But now I know that he made a lot of bad choices himself. I spin his Rolodex and land on Heigl, Catherine. I take her card and turn it over, and I see that he approached her at Little Dom's, a restaurant in Los Feliz. He told her that she had some fans getting aggressive out front and that she would be wiser to go out the back. He said she was pretty, grateful, took a selfie with me, said she'll follow me on Instagram. I pick up the mic. So, does Catherine Heigl follow you on Instagram?
Put that down!
Fincher stares at the Rolodex. His eyes are a ride in a theme park. Two beady little balls to hell.
That's police business.
Really? I ask. Because unless there's a special division dedicated exclusively to stopping imaginary celebrity crimes, I'd say this feels more like personal stuff to me.
You have no right to look at that.
I laugh. He doesn't.
I have eyes on a lot of people. That's not my only file.
I'm sure, I say. Anyway, did she follow you on Instagram?
She was very nice.
He sidesteps.
Listen, you sick fuck. This is a big mistake.
Robin, I say, do you know you could go to jail for this?
Put it down.
What the fuck is wrong with you? I ask. Why would you ever bring this on a plane?
That's none of your business.
It is now, I say. As a concerned citizen, I have every right to look out for my fellow countrymen. This is a breach.
Tell me what you want, he pleads. Just put it down and tell me what you want.
What do I want?
Anything, he says. This is crazy. You gotta let me out of here.
That's not happening. And he should realize that, and I ignore him, and I spin through his Rolodex and thank God that I am me, that I didn't get sick like this, that I don't covet imaginary friends and pry into places where I don't belong. What a dreadful existence to be the man in possession of this Rolodex. Fincher, I say, you do realize that these things are supposed to have the names and numbers of people who know you too.
Fuck you!
I shake my head. They always get like that when you reach the truth. The way a fish nips at the bait after circling. Robin is breaking, biting. He is boiling down to his fuck you self. This is his mug of urine, his mistake, and his is infinitely worse than mine. His mug of piss may not contain his DNA, but it reveals so much more, his demented ego, his emotional core. He's no different from a 13-year-old girl writing a letter to Justin Timberlake, thinking he might write back. Fincher's Rolodex is a motherfucking hope chest. Robin, I say, was Eddie Murphy making a big mistake when he didn't think it was funny that you pulled him over for having a banana in his tailpipe? Robin turns red.
Stop it!
I shake my head. I just think Beverly Hills Cop was a long time ago, and he's probably a busy guy, you know? He probably had somewhere he had to be. Do you think it was a great choice as an aspiring actor? Did you think he would find you funny?
Stop it,
he says. He pumps his fists, and you can tell he's used to carrying a weapon. You know, you're supposed to be looking for Delilah, I remind him. You just swore to me that you were going to find her, but you, motherfucker, you took off to Cabo 3 days later. And we both know you only tracked me down because I was on a set. I laugh. You actually had me scared a little. Your whole bad cop demeanor and the way you were sniffing around about me, threatening me, stealing my headphones.
As if you didn't steal them first,
he says, eyes blazing. Of course I did, I reveal. And he smirks, as if he figured something out, as if he won. But what you don't realize is that I stole them from Henderson when I killed him. Fincher starts to turn purple.
You sick fuck.
I sigh. Says the man who travels with a Rolodex of celebrities' addresses. Do you know what would happen if this got into the wrong hands? I mean, not that you'll be around to deal with the consequences. He's on his feet now, and he throws the ice bucket at the glass. He throws one water bottle, then the other. He falls to his knees, and he's not crying because I'm going to kill him. Oh, sure, you assume that, because he's locked in a cage and about to die. But Robin Fincher is crying because all he ever wanted was for this Rolodex to be his, truly. He wanted to be buddies with these people. He wanted Katherine Heigl to follow him on Instagram. He even noted with an asterisk on the back, friends call her Katie, and he's crying because none of that is going to happen. He will never be friends with Katie Heigl. And in spite of all the red carpet events he crashed with his uniform, you should see this picture of him at an Oblivion event where he's with Tom Cruise and the security guards in back look like they're gonna fucking kill him. Well, the point is, Fincher met a lot of people. But that was it. You can't have a conversation with an autograph. And you can't go out to lunch with a group selfie. And no matter how grateful Julia Roberts is that you alerted her to some problems with the elevator in the chateau, bullshit, she is only going to close the door and lock it because she doesn't fucking know you, Robin Fincher. Now he wants me to leave him alone. But we're not done yet. Oh, come on, I say. This Rolodex is thick.
I mean, we haven't even gotten to Efron, Zach. Stop it, he says. I mean it.
No, I say. We're going to get to the bottom of some of these choices. Same way I acknowledged my bad choice when I crossed the street.
Yes, I have authority issues. I concede that I should have waited for the walk signal, Robin.
I can be a punk. I am a little fucking New York that way, and you were right, and I accepted my responsibility. He cries.
Please let me go. Please. Please.
I flip over Crawford, Cindy. He punches the glass.
Stop it!
Wow, I say. You really think she was flirting with you? Because I don't know, Robin. I'm gonna guess that she was trying to get out of a ticket.
Stop it!
That's what is so great about your stories, I tell him. You don't even understand who you are, Robin. You're a police officer.
Fuck you.
An officer of the law.
Fuck you.
These people are just like me, I say, and I point to his Rolodex. All of us, we're just trying to get out of a ticket. Don't you get that? He spits. I point to him.
You, cop.
I say. I point at myself.
Me, citizen.
I do it again, repeating that Tom Cruise is like me, a citizen, and that Jennifer Aniston is like me, a citizen. He screams and shakes like a monkey, and I won't let up.
No, 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 I say. You chose to be a cop, and you don't get to be a cop/actor.
Because you can't be a cop and an actor, and deep down you know this, or you would have gone for it, Robin. You would have taken your classes and waited tables and dedicated your life to your dream, but no, you knew he didn't have it. And this is life, you fucking shithead. You don't get to be anything/anything.
You don't know, he whimpers, that Chinese guy? The one from The Hangover, he was a doctor before he got into the business.
I look at this sad man, comparing himself to a brilliant comedic actor. The pure absence of self-awareness is enough to kill me.
Fincher, I say. Ken Jeong is talented. You're not.
Fuck you.
That's why Ken Jeong tried to break into the business the old-fashioned way. The honest way, I explain. He quit being a doctor to become an actor. You're a cop. These people in here, they all have talent. You don't. He looks like he might start crying again. But it's wrong of him to use his badge to harass celebrities, and it's downright disgusting of him to ditch his legitimate police work to go down to Cabo and meet Megan Fox. I don't feel bad for this fucker. You get a job, you do the job. No/the end. He pounds the glass and his words bleed together, merging into a whiny plea.
Let me the fuck out of here. This is wrong. You are sick and I want out. I want out now.
I can't do that, I say. You're a bad cop. You know where all these famous people are, but you didn't try to find Delilah. He stares at me.
You sick dick, he rails. You won't get away with this.
Of course I will, I say. If you were a better cop, you'd realize that by now. He kicks, and he is trapped, and he is still correcting his fucking shirt when it gets stuck, still self-conscious about his appearance, still convinced that his appearance matters. Fucking Angelinos. I need a laugh, a break. I kick back and scroll through his Rolodex and flip over Efron, Zach. I smile. He hits the glass.
Okay, Robin. I begin. Robin, not officer.
I want to know. When you pulled Zac Efron over because his left rear tire looked flat, did you seriously choose to do that because you thought you guys look enough alike that you could play his father in a movie? He does not nod this time. He does not yell obscenities. And maybe I should have started with a different celebrity. Maybe unknown, Rihanna. Driving without a seatbelt. Or Nicholson, Jack, flickering headlight. Then I might have gotten to hear the details behind Robin Fincher's life of celebrity stalking.
But there's so much I'll never know. Because Robin Fincher is so angry at me, the person holding the Rolodex with all the celebrities he wanted so badly to know, so angry at himself that he becomes a bull. He becomes a zombie. You can see what brains he had evaporate as his eyes shine. His skin is raw, red. He runs headlong into the glass, like a football player whose brain is already gone. He spatters against the walls and falls back, dead. It turns out that I have a talent for landscape design. Someday, when Love and I have a place together, I'll oversee the yard. Sure, we'll have workers doing a lot of it, and maybe even a professional designer, but I'll have the final say. I am good at this, at knowing what belongs where. I never would have known this if I had stayed in New York. You don't really get to go to the park and relocate a tree. You don't get to take nature into your hands when you live in concrete. But I did great today. I took that fucking cactus that didn't belong out front, and I brought it in the back to the Zen garden. I dug a hole. I went deep. I sweated. I liked it. I miss work. And digging a hole for Fincher doesn't make me feel the way digging a hole for Beck did. He never broke my heart. He was just a bad cop. I finish, and I return inside to the cool air in the panic studio. I drag Fincher's body outside and toss him into this hole, and I am sweating so much now. I bury him, his Rolodex too, both of them so deep, deeper than Beck. And then the fun part. I plant the cactus above Fincher and his Rolodex. The cactus belongs here. It works here and unifies the space, establishes it somehow, more green, less brown. It's the right size for this garden, and there are more cactuses nearby, so it doesn't look so lonely and idiotic anymore. It doesn't stand out the way it did in front. I drink water and look around this yard and at this cactus, with fat pads and its proud, confident stance. I like it. I swear the thing is even smiling at me. I think it knows that I brought it home. I give it one last look and I turn to go. I have so much to do. I have to clean up the mess Fincher made when he killed himself. I have to get back to Love and act like a guy who went for a run. And I will do all this, and I will do it soon, but I think it's important to give yourself time and space to celebrate the work you do. I think that's why people in LA fall apart, why they get so needy, so desperate for validation, for their cars, for their body parts, for their talents. They forgot that the sweetest thing in life is to be alone, as you were born, as you will die, soaking in the sun, knowing that you put the cactus in the right place, that you don't need someone to come along and compliment your work, that someone who did that would, in fact, just be getting in the way. I am at peace here. Fincher is too. Chapter 39. The rest of Cabo passes in a blur of tequila and boat rides and waiting for news from Forty's agent, and soon we are back in the States, but I am still in foreign territory. Love's home. I've never been, but it's like I've lived here all my life. It's new and old in all the right places, with customized red appliances and lush, gargantuan, part leather, part fur sofas. It's just where you want to be when you fly back to America after burying a dead cop. Unlike my apartment, which is so dated and tarnished. It sucks to know that Dez sold me out, but then a friendly neighborhood drug dealer is, at the end of the day, a drug dealer, out for himself. I can't even hate him for it. I'm just happy to be in Love's home instead of mine. I could sit here for hours, just looking at her same old Instagram photos. Love in an elevator. I just called to say I love you. She smiles. I like this one because of the old school curly blue phone cord. Yeah, I say. Old school. She says no more pictures. She's tired of her face. I obey her wish and toss my phone on another part of this voluminous sectional. Oh, to breathe. To know that I did it. I got rid of Fincher. Love leaps off the couch. Come on, she says. I want you to see everywhere.
And I do want to see everywhere. I want to sit everywhere. This is a dream house with neon signs like the ones in the pantry. Love has a playroom with board games and a PlayStation and a karaoke machine and a stage, instruments flung about. The neon sign here says, sex is better when you're in love. And she says every room has a sign. The kitchen is made with love, and the dining room is let love rule, and her bedroom door is closed, and the neon above the frame reads, and in the end, dot, dot, dot. Then she opens the door, and her bedroom is the perfect hybrid of our intimate squeaky cell in Palm Springs and the too big luxury of Cabo and the oceanfront seasonal breeze of Malibu. Love flops onto her bed, and I look at the art above it. John Lennon's lyrics in neon, the ones he famously misquotes from Paul McCartney. It is a miracle that she is not a vapid nitwit, and this is the rest of my life. Under the covers, where we could be in a shitty rat-infested walk-up in Murray Hill or anywhere. It doesn't matter. We found love. And then out of nowhere, the lights go out. Home invasion, earthquake, end of the world. But then music blasts and love grabs my hands.
Surprise!
It's my song. My pitch-perfect pool mashup. And she remembered when I mentioned this way back when we first met in her Tesla that first ride. When you are in love, you listen. Strobe lights come up and love starts running and she is tearing off her top and she is slipping out of her skirt and she is unsnapping her bra and she is opening a sliding door onto the patio and she is naked and she is running into the pool and I am naked, following her, splash, skinny dipping, making the pool our own. I am inside of love in her pool and my song bleeds into her song, bleeds back into her song. And this is perfect, and there is nothing but our songs, and our bodies, and our water, and our future, and the lemon trees, the orange trees. We fuck, and we talk. Our songs are on a loop. Our life is on a loop. And suddenly, my favorite word in the English language, we. Love has plans for us. We're going to go to Chateau. She is dying for those truffle fries. And we are going to watch Pitch Perfect. She hasn't seen it in a while. And we are going to go to my apartment and get my things, assuming it's not too much too fast. I kiss her. God, no. And there is a loud sound in the house. The pop of a bottle of Veuve. 40. Love calls out to him, and he doesn't answer, and then he comes running, fat feet padding, and he cannonballs into our pool, and he doesn't belong here. Love squeals. He emerges from the water. 40, this isn't really the best time, I say, looking at my naked girlfriend who elegantly swims to the stairs and reaches for her bikini and covers herself with the ease of a Bond girl. I can do no such thing. My shorts are far away on a fucking chaise. 40 flops like a sea lion and Love looks at me and I shrug. He swims to the other side of the pool and picks up a waterproof remote control and now a projection screen begins to open on the far wall. I look at Love.
We watch movies here, she says.
40 fumbles with the remote. I think he's on a fair amount of cocaine. His fingers jitter. But he is able to find his destination. Deadline.com. And there, on the front page, on the giant screen, a headline. 40 sells two, : Megan Ellison's Annapurna to produce two original scripts by debut screenwriter 40 Quinn. I rub water out of my eyes and force myself to stay calm. It's just a headline. A mistake, that's all. We'll call the paper or the website or whatever the fuck it is and they'll change the headline, put my name in it. I motion for the remote and he tosses it to me. I refresh the page because maybe 40 already took care of that. Maybe he thinks they already fixed things, got my name in there. The remote is slow. The world is fast, loud. Love and 40 scream and splash each other, and I can't be in this fucking pool waiting right now, and my stomach is whirling, and I get out of the pool, and I streak across the Spanish tile floor, and grab my shorts and get into them. I get my phone, and I drip on it, and I have to protect it. I shiver. My nipples are hard. I turn away from Love and 40, and I go to Deadline, but it's the same shit,
and then the article itself loads and it gets worse. The article reports that both scripts are written by 40 Quinn and there is no mention of brilliant newcomer Joe Goldberg anywhere. I read the first paragraph over and over as if my name might be buried in there in some sort of cryptogram Da Vinci Code bullshit, but no. I scroll down and scan the screen for the words Joe and Goldberg, but again, no. I am breathing fast, like I'm running, like I'm fucking, and I'm fucked. He stole my scripts and fucked me.
Joe?
It's Love, my girlfriend, the one whose twin brother fucked me. He fucked me. I clutch the phone. I turn back around. Love is on the deck, squeezing her hair. 40 is still in the pool, treading water. I want a harpoon. I want to end him. Love clears her throat. At some point in the last 35 seconds, she put on a hooded bathrobe and picked up her iPad.
Go on, sister girl, 40 says.
He sucks vuv out of the bottle.
Let me hear it. Come on, lovey.
And I quote, she begins, Megan Ellison tells Deadline that she has discovered a major talent in Quinn and plans to fast-track the third twin and the mess and...
Love squeals.
The bidding war, which lasted all summer.
Love balks. She stares at 40. He laughs.
You always think the worst of me, he says.
Every time you disappeared, I assumed you were holed up at the Ritz, she says.
40 laughs.
Well, not every time, but sometimes women can prove to be very inspirational.
Love reads to us about the hot property and summarizes the comments. People are saying that Barry Stein is a fool. He's washed up. He could have had these scripts early on, but he has no eye for talent anymore. Not that anyone would ever choose to team up with Stein over Megan Ellison. Megan Ellison is the best, and they're saying 40 Quinn is the best, and apparently there's a murder scene in the desert that will make you see the world in a whole new way. And 40 Quinn has been pitching for years, and it's one of those situations where talent and hard work and perseverance pay off. And you can't make it in Hollywood without all three. And I am rubbing my eyes again and they sting. Love strokes my head.
Are you okay?
The chlorine hit me hard, I say.
It's a saltwater pool, she says.
She kisses my head.
Maybe you should go inside and wash up.
All I want is to get away from 40, but I know what I have to do first. I have to put on a fucking show. I have to stand up and walk over to the pool, and I have to extend a hand to him. I have to shake his damn wrinkled hand.
Congrats, my man.
Thanks, old sport, he says and tears off his sunglasses.
The best news is this is only the beginning.
I think he winks. I don't know. Maybe that's his resting face and I never noticed it. I blame my aspirations. The ones I fed every time I sat down at Intelligentsia to write. Fucking idiot I am. I am so much better than this. I should have spent my summer writing a book. And 40 lowers his voice.
Megan says we have a big future together. Huge.
The pronouns are discombobulated. We, as in he and Megan. I am not in the we, even though their we could not exist without me. Me. Megan Ellison. My skin crawls.
That's awesome, I manage. You did it.
He nods, slow.
Yes, he says. I fucking did it.
Love squeals.
You guys, it's on Variety now.
The news is everywhere, and I am nowhere, and Love doesn't know it, but she is celebrating my demise. I go inside, but I don't go to one of the 7 bathrooms to wash up. No. I go to 40's knapsack where I find his iPad and pull up his Gmail. I read the emails, so many emails, between 40 and his agent, this dumb fucker who thinks 40 grew into his voice. I don't know what you did this summer, but whatever it is, it worked. Well done, 40. Here's to 40 more. And there are more emails. Here's one from Barry Stein. He wants to know when 40 became so fucking funny, yet also so goddamned original. Are people saying Tarantino? This feels like Tarantino.
and that compliment is mine. I wrote these scripts, and here's one, someone at CAA, someone who wants to know how he came up with this cage. Trapping that girl in the cage after that beachy weekend to go from the beach to the cage. Fucking amazing, funny, twisted shit, Mr. Man. You are God.